Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and on today's episode, we're talking best moves of the MLS offseason, theoretical Apple TV content, best game day atmospheres in the league, and much, much more. To do so, I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend. It's Jeff Lowry. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Hello. My name's Jeff. I hear Joe sucks, and I'm better than him.
Now, I don't know if Jeff has anything prepared, and I do agree that Jeff is better than Joe, but Joe did tell me that he wanted to spend the entire first segment on Brandon Vasquez to start things off. So, Joe, should we just clear out for you on that one?
I'm still Jeff. I don't know what you're talking about or where you're leading there. But no, I'm excited to talk about what the multiple listing service or whatever MLS
That's
is
the
these
one.
Days. Let's
you
do
got it.
MLS.com, baby.
Rounding out the crew, no longer fresh from cutting first tracks in that sweet, sweet powder. It's David Goss. How is it to be back in that big city, David?
Yeah,
Goss.
It's great. There's actually really good skiing down the hill. For me in Brooklyn. So I'm actually excited about that.
Feel like now we're talking code for illicit activities.
Yeah.
Can is I also skiing throw out in there? Brooklyn is there? Huh?
I'm old enough now that my entire social media account is about how to buy a house, and everyone talks about going to MLS now and like going to a major mm-hmm. listing service, and I'm triggered every time because I'm like, you guys are saying it wrong.
Yeah.
You can't use the, and you can't say it that way, and you got to go to soccer.com. You can't just go to MLS.
Yeah, it's multiple listing service.com. You have to spell it all out and then write
Correct.
Service twice. I think it's how it works. Guys, on the Patreon yesterday, we talked briefly about the kit leaks, our favorites and maybe our least favorites. What have you seen? What do you make of the ones you've seen so far?
I have seen all of them. I skimmed uh-huh. through all of them and decided I was going to remember none of it.
Attaboy.
So that's how I feel pretty strongly.
All right. I'm glad that you've seen them and have no thoughts. Consummate professional David Goss. Let's get to the questions. Coming from on the Discord from Gravy Train. Best MLS move so far this window, in your opinion? And Joe, also maybe the biggest head scratchers so far.
Okay, I'll start with one. I have, I think, five moves that I like a lot that have already happened. There are others that I like, but these are the ones that are towards the top of my list. And then I have a couple of ones that I don't love. I had a bit more trouble with that just because it feels like every signing in some ways is just like throwing a dart at the board, and some are better throws by better dart players, like that 16-year-old kid who looks like he's 45, right? He's throwing some of them, and we're throwing some of the other ones. It's a little hard to tell sometimes.
Is it, Joe, is it also that there haven't been as many moves thus far, or as many big moves? Because I think that's what I struggled with, was finding ones that, like, some were just like, yeah, that seems okay. There were none that I was fully like, this is way too much money, this is not going to work.
Yeah, there really haven't been a ton of giant dominoes to fall yet. There's still a lot of DP spots open around Major League Soccer, and those are going to be the moves, Taylor, to sort of to your point, I guess, your question, that encourage the most vitriol, right? They're either going to be really good or really not so good. It could be a waste of a DP slot, et cetera, et cetera. But I've got some on my list. So the first one that's on my list, it happened a while ago now, but it still feels like maybe the no-brainer top move of the offseason, is Miles Robinson signing for FC Cincinnati. It's not the sexiest option because it's good team gets good center back, and center backs don't tend to get a ton of great pub in the first place. But this
Cincinnati.
Is a no-brainer, right? Like, this is an elite center back in Major League Soccer. They're replacing Yerson Mosquera, who's now off to, I think, La Liga on loan from Wolves. So I would say that loan stint in Cincinnati worked out really well for him. It seems to have worked out really well for Cincinnati last year when they win the Shield. It's a great replacement, probably even an upgrade on Yerson Mosquera. and there's not going to be any drop-off in Cincinnati's back three. So I love that move for Cincy. I think it continues to push them up into that top of the East conversation. There are other questions in their squad. Are they going to get their central midfielder from the Czech Republic over the line? Are they going to go out there and get one more forward? Or are they going to roll with Corey Barrett starting next to Aaron Bupenza? It's not like Cincy are done. I think there's still things left for them to actually get over the line this offseason. But Robinson was an early no-brainer move from them.
Joe, an important question for me on the sexiness of that move. It relates to Cincinnati. If your most famous food you make is chili, can you be considered a sexy city just from the jump?
You certainly have a harder road to that designation. I don't think it's impossible. It gets even harder when you have spaghetti in that equation for some unknown reason.
Some would say it gets more nonsense, but yeah, sure, that's fine.
Yeah.
I would argue if we're talking sexy, we probably need to talk to an expert like Jeff Lowry.
should we get it? Let's see if I can find him. All right.
I feel like Jeff Lowry. He's channeling Jeff now.
Yeah, I've decided since he don't make the cut. Okay. So that's the Jeff take on this one.
Can I just ask, does it sound like since he also needs two wingbacks?
Maybe. Yeah. So, probably.
It sounds like Santi Arias is leaving and Barrel wants to leave, which it's one of those things where it feels like the core of this team is there, but it also feels like on day one of this season, every other piece that isn't the core will be different.
Yeah.
And would that make it a good or a bad move for you, David Guss?
I think if you're a team that won a supporter shield, you want continuity. I think they've done really well to set themselves up to be prepared. And I've said over and over in MLS, if you have a spine that you can trust, it makes it easier for players to fit in. It makes it easier to bring pieces in versus a team that's trying to add to the spine on the fly. And we saw how long for some teams that made moves like Orlando last year, how long it took for them to sort of find their flow as it went along. So I think for Cincinnati, it's worrying, but there's trust with that front office and that coaching staff that they kind of have an idea of like what's next every time they make a move.
Fair. So Joe said he has five. I think he's given us one. Guss, I'll invite you to jump in with one of your own.
Okay. I have mine split in MLS moves and then coming to MLS moves.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with my MLS moves because Miles Robinson was on that list. I'm going to do another.
Can you explain that distinction? I'm assuming it means moves that have happened and moves that are not yet to happen but seem likely to happen.
No, it's moves that are happening of players moving inside the league and then moves of players coming to Major League Soccer from outside the league.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I'm going to go center back as well. I'm going to go Kamal Miller. I think for Portland, the MLS Cup runs they've made have been built on the back of strong center back play, and they just got older and older at those positions without ever really refilling things. Kamal Miller's versatile. He's good on the ball. He's obviously played under Phil Neville before. I don't love Zach McGraw as an international level player, an all-star, whatever you want to call it, top best 11, but I think he's a good starting MLS center back, and that becomes easier when you're starting next to a player who's also comfortable and good at what they do. So I think for Portland, that's a big move. They didn't really give up that much for a player of that quality on now a decent contract and for a little while. So I like that move for Kamal Miller. And then the next one I'm going to go is Nico Lodero. I don't think Nico Lodero is who he was for Orlando, but he's better than what they had. And I think for a team that wants to be built around Facu Torres and wants to take a half step forward, this is a good move of a guy who, it's not going to take him a while to figure it out. He's going to understand his role pretty quickly. He's going to help carry some of the young guys. And now hearing the Duncan McGuire rumors, you're going to need someone, I think, who helps the next forward settle in. I think Nico can be that guy.
Joe, I don't know if you had Kamal Miller or Nico Lodero, but hopefully you still have a few names left on your list.
Yep, I just had Nico Lodero written down four more times, so that actually wipes out my entire list. No, I do have another Portland player, though. Maxime Crépeau going to the Timbers. I think of those two guys, and maybe we'll fight about this. I think Crépeau is pretty clearly the bigger addition for the Timbers. They needed help in the middle of the back line, but they really, really needed help in goal. Their goalkeeping unit last year gave up more goals over expected than every team in Major League Soccer except one, the LA Galaxy, who were atrocious last year. They were just sort of ahead of Atlanta United last year and behind the LA Galaxy. It was a really, really rough year for Portland's goalkeeping unit. Maxime Crépeau is a good goalkeeper, maybe even a great goalkeeper on a good day in Major League Soccer. He was incredible for LAFC in the playoffs last year, coming back after his injury. And generally, he's either been like right around average or well above average over the last several seasons inside of MLS. There's a reason why LAFC went out to get him from Vancouver, and there's a reason now why Portland wanted to get him in free agency. I think it's a no-brainer and a really, really strong signing from the Timbers, who still have work to do, by the way. But I love the Kamal Miller move. I just really, really love the Maxime Crépeau move. A couple of others on my list, Taylor. I do have Emil Forsberg to the Red Bulls, and I'm not going to touch on this one for too long because we'll get to it more later on in the show. But I do think that is an easy upgrade in their attack. It's also representative of maybe something bigger in the pipeline between the European Red Bull clubs and the Major League Soccer Red Bull club that it feels like Red Bull Global forget exists from time to time. And then my other two on-field good moves, or really good moves, ones that more than most. Yeah, go ahead. Wait,
should I save this question? It's a question about Forsberg and what you just said there. Should I save that till we get to him later on?
Yeah, we can save it for later. Okay, I've got plenty more to go through. Yeah, that's fine. In terms of the last couple of moves on my great list, I have Julian Gressel going to Inter Miami. Now, it seems like things are very much still in the process of clicking for Miami, as they are for every team in preseason right now. I don't think they found their tactical recipe really at all, and I don't really like the 3-5-2 that Tata Martino's been using. But Gressel is a fantastic player, and he does give Miami's attack another dimension with his service from that right side. I think that is maybe the most obvious positive move that Miami could have made from a player who was already in Major League Soccer. So I love that one as well. And then Georgie going to Colorado. I can't remember if I mentioned that one or not because time is a flat circle. But Taylor's shaking his head no. Excellent work. 95th percentile and non-penalty expected goals plus expected assisted goals in his last season in Major League Soccer. Like, he was fantastic for Wilfred Nancy and CF Montreal. I'm curious. I don't know if skeptical is the right word. I'm curious to see how much of that was Nancy being a great coach and making Montreal into a well-oiled machine that finished second in the Eastern Conference, and how much of that was Georgi Mihailovic taking a legitimate step forward. The Rapids are clearly banking on it being the latter there, and they're banking on him being an elite playmaker in a much different system to any system that he's played in consistently in Major League Soccer or over in the Netherlands. It's a risk for Colorado, but they're a team that needed to take a couple of risks, and I think, generally speaking, he doesn't take up a DP spot. He's been a good MLS player in other years. He's only been a great MLS player for 1 year. Either way, it's a big upgrade for the Rapids and a sort of a move that they can afford to make, even with the risk that comes with it.
Joe's given us a few more players and also sent a stray in the direction of Kamal Miller. How are you feeling about that?
I have Georgie on my list as well, okay. So I agree with Joe. I'm going to speak to Jeff now because I assume that's who went on the Maxime Crépeau rant. Maxime Crépeau is a big game goalkeeper. Like, he's been fantastic in the postseason. He has been average or below average in regular seasons otherwise. I don't think it's as big a move as we all feel it's going to be. I understand the hole in goal for the Timbers of, like, the upgrade for them is massive. Like, they played David Bingham a ton last year. So if they sign John McCarthy, it could potentially be an upgrade. And John McCarthy is obviously one of the worst goalkeepers in Major League Soccer. So I could understand the positivity there. I think Crépeau fits into the game model as well, has experience in the league, has had some good years. I don't believe he is a larger game changer than Kamal Miller will be. And I would be surprised if he's starting for them in 2 years because they're not LAFC, where they're playing in every final and every knockout competition where he rose to the occasion. They need to grind through to make the playoffs finally. And I don't know if he's the player for that, but I agree on Georgie. I agree overall that the Timbers got better. The other two moves I had in there were Petar Musa coming to FC Dallas, the center forward from Benfica. I don't know if it's done yet. Both of these, I'm not sure if they're done yet. Well, one I know isn't. This is a style of transfer Dallas has pretty much never made, and they're doing it in a year where they haven't lost. So when they brought in Alan Velasco, it was to replace players they had sold overseas, to replace players that they had moved on and using that money. This is pretty much a team that's going to come back as strong as they were last year, and now you're adding elite talent. You're doing so in a way that I think will use Jesus Ferreira better. You have versatility with Kamungo as well. It sounds like there's potential that they can continue to add from there. So I think this is a really big move for Dallas. If I'm a Dallas fan, I'd be excited for what this team could look like this year. And then the other one is Eddie Atuesta. He was an elite MLS player when he was here. It sounds like he's coming back to LAFC, at least on loan. They've lost almost their entire central midfield. He is a central midfield upon himself. he was last time he was here, and I think he can do that again. So you think about him and Tillman in there already. You've got ground coverage. You've got ability to connect. I think he can hit a killer pass a little bit more than some of the other guys that have been in that group and more than Tillman. And for LAFC, I think by bringing him in, you're starting already at a high point in the offseason, even without other moves that you're going to make.
I love the Eddie Atuesta move as well. Tom was on that one yesterday, along with, I think, a couple of other folks down from South America. Gus, by LAFC losing their entire midfield, do you mean Kellen Acosta? Or are there other people that I'm forgetting about?
They loaned out Buke.
Krastev, who didn't play, and Buke is
a
winner.
It sounds like everyone else of the young guys is going to get loaned out. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I meant in terms of like whatever else was in rotation. Over the last 2 years, now you add in like losing Latif, losing Seba Mendes.
Things have changed. Things have changed for sure.
And I would question, not in a negative way, just is Ilya going to be able to do it for another year at his age?
Yeah, and that's a huge question for LAFC this year, because it seems like they're aware of the fact that they cannot afford to play Ilya Sanchez as an every game player across a bunch of competitions in the way that they did last year. They can't do that in 2024. I think they know that. Atuesta, though, is a fascinating move because he didn't play as a number eight last time he was in Major League Soccer. He was the number six, the single pivot, the back point of that triangle for Bob Bradley, mostly with Latif Blessing and Marc-Anthony Kay in front of him. Like, that was the base of that fantastic 2019 LAFC team. Atuesta proved to be a phenomenal number six. Granted, I think he got some benefit because LAFC were just a monstrous team that year. Like, they were so good at almost every spot, and they played really good soccer, and that made his life easy in a lot of respects, but he also made life easy for the players around him. But all that to say, he was a single pivot number six. That is clearly a role where he can shine. That's also what Ilya Sanchez does. Like, that's his thing. So there's an obvious solution here in that one of them is the starter and one of them is the backup. I don't know, though, that you bring Atuesta back and you are so ready to relegate Ilya to the bench, right? So I'm curious, are we going to see a double pivot sometimes? Are we going to see Atuesta play as a number eight? I haven't seen much of him in Brazil. Maybe he was doing some of that there. I've read that he wasn't particularly good down in Brazil. So, you know, who knows what we can make of that stretch. I'm just curious to see what Steve Cherundolo does in terms of his midfield construction, because I don't know that you bring Atuesta in to sit on the bench, and I don't know that it's time to bench Ilya Sanchez either, which means maybe something is going to change in how this team is constructed. Time will tell.
You don't feel that Kellen and Ilya in basically most of their big games with Tillman were two sixes or two eights, whatever you want to call it, if not three, with Tillman playing as a quote-unquote 10?
Yeah, not really. Like, I watched LAFC a bunch last year. I mostly saw them with Ilya as the deepest player. Acosta would come deeper than Tim Tillman, but it wasn't like a double pivot with Tillman playing as the 10. To me, it still looked like that very similar, you know, Bob Bradley-esque 4-3-3 structure. Just Cherundolo's changed how the tactics work within that structure. But I don't think a change is impossible, and I don't think it's impossible for Cherundolo sort of to view it as more of a tweak than a big wholesale shift. Just thinking, okay, yeah, we'll keep one guy a little bit deeper on the left, and Atuesta will pull some of the strings on that side, and everything's going to be fine. But I think there are still questions about how those signings actually all fit together in that team. But I'm with you, Gus. Like, Atuesta seems like a very good player, and I think he makes LAFC better.
Those were all very interesting answers. Unfortunately, I can award no points because the correct answer is future Golden Boot winner Luis Suarez, who was quite good in Brazil. That is the answer as to who is the smartest move
so
far.
I thought we had that little star on the bottom of the show, disclaimer, like, in all categories, will not mention Inter Miami as part of the competition.
Well, I think Joe already had Julian Gressel in there. So, yeah, gosh, that just means now you get to mention somebody from Inter Miami whenever you choose to do so.
I'm going to say, because it counts as a full transfer year, I'm going to throw it out there. I'm going to say Lionel Messi. Is that how you say it? Is that how it's pronounced?
Definitely that.
Yeah, I'm going to say him.
Okay, there we go. Thank you for that, David Goss. In terms of biggest head scratchers, Joe, we already talked a little bit about maybe not having like strong answers to this one. I feel like where I landed was that coaches might be the biggest question mark for me. Chris Armas to Colorado, Phil Neville to Portland, Caleb Porter to New England. I think it was Jeff Reuter wrote a piece about Minnesota United, and his point was,
sorry, there's another Jeff out there. This is going to be crushing news to Jeff Lowry.
Yes, but you come first in the alphabet, so you're superior, obviously. Yes. And I'm not trying to paint his point unfairly, but in discussing the calamity that is Minnesota United, he was like, however, is it better to not have a coach right now, given some of the other hires? And then he went through that list of coaches that have been hired. That is, those are all three, like, they're interesting in that they could work out. They're interesting in that they might not work out. And I think those are the ones where I have the biggest head scratch about the moves that have happened. So that is where I went with that one. Joe, any thoughts on that or other players that you're less confident about?
I did think about putting a coach or two on this list because I had on my list that we don't need to spend much time on, but in terms of like a positive move off the field, I had the Galaxy elevating Will Kuntz to their GM role. I think that happened in December, and that's like a no-brainer positive for them. Chris Klein's gone. Jovan Karofsky's gone. Like, these are positive moves to the Galaxy front office. So I thought about mirroring that and looking at, you know, some off-field decisions by some of these other clubs. Thought about putting Caleb Porter's name down. I thought about Neville. I thought about Armas. I just don't feel strongly enough about any of them as like major mistakes. I don't love any of those hires, but I don't know that they fill me with dread either, or that they would fill me with dread if I was a fan of one of those teams. So I did stay on the field. The first name on my list is one that Taylor's probably not going to make you too happy. Gabriel Priani just never has looked like a good soccer player in his young career. DC United was brought in to be a number 10 midway through last year. He was brought in on a loan with an option to buy. And I'm not really sure what DC saw that made them think, yo, fellas, we got to activate that buy clause. Like, I don't know what it was. He didn't play a ton, so there's probably still some untapped potential. He's just 20 years old, so I'm not at all ruling out a Gauss Theorem style, you know, breakout second year in Major League Soccer. But across 3,500 minutes in Brazil and MLS, he just hasn't done much in the attack. Like, he's been played as a number 10 or high up on the field, and he doesn't create chances and he doesn't find them for himself. So I don't love that decision. It is honestly a head scratcher for me. But this move overall, to look at it from a slightly more positive DC perspective, it feels to me like Ali Mackay, new chief soccer officer over in DC, wants to buy himself some time before making any really big moves. Like, this offseason, I think of for DC as being let's get stable, let's try not to win the spoon, and let's like try to build some tactical foundation that Troy Lesane is playing off of that then allows us to go out and get some big time players moving forward. You know, maybe that'll end up being a Benteke replacement and a Click replacement because those guys aren't going to be around forever. Or maybe they do try to take a bigger swing sooner rather than later. But I get that perspective from Mackay of wanting to maybe ease in a little bit and not go out and make a big move and rush it and end up missing and wasting even more time. But I also don't think bringing Pirani back in and probably having him play a big role this year sets DC United up for much success in 2024.
Goss, Joe has decided to attack me personally with his anti-DC United rhetoric. Any moves that you are scratching your head about so far?
Taylor, I got you, because I'm going to attack Joe personally.
Thank you, Goss.
On mine. Also, I'd like to state, did you guys know Yaya Toure was the Saudi Arabian national team assistant coach?
Nope.
So Goss is watching AFCON while we record? Is that?
Or no, I'm watching Asian Cup while we record. Cup, Saudi
excuse
Arabia.
Me, of course, yes, yes.
And Andy Herzog, of course, alongside Jurgen Klinsmann, there till the end.
Please, this segment has gone not long enough, so please draw it out with more Asian Cup conversation.
So Taylor, I think your coaching point is really interesting. I think it makes a ton of sense. I think it shows, and I may have said this on the show already, I think what the league, and like using that as a ambiguous term, took from, I think, Houston's success last year was like, I can hire a locker room manager who knows the league and then I'm in charge. I think a lot of the GMs and sporting directors and CSOs in the league looked at what happened with Ben Olsen and sort of said, like, I can pick an MLS veteran coach who can keep things on the rails, and then I can dictate the way my team plays based off who I bring in and what we decide to do. I think that's what we've seen from a lot of these coaching hires, and maybe a lack of bravery in like, oh, we can change the league. I can change the way things are done. And unfortunately, I think that's the reaction to what happened last year and like what worked and what was success. And that's not a knock on Ben Olsen, right? Houston Dynamo were arguably the most entertaining team to watch in MLS. And they did things that the club hasn't done in 10 plus years. But I think that's sort of what we've seen as we've gone across the league. My knock, and this is like a super small one, Joe mentioned Will Kuntz. Shout out to Will Kuntz. I think he's going to be very good. But this is like the 97th international fullback that the LA Galaxy have brought in a league in which there's like no proof that that makes you better. So what they've done is they brought in John McCarthy, who, of course, best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer. And then this Japanese fullback, Miki Yamane, where they've brought in U22 signings at fullback. They've brought in international fullbacks. It just doesn't seem like a position that really moves the needle. And it felt like a very odd move. And some of the moves they've made so far this year have felt not like what I thought Will Koontz would bring. Now, I think part of that is like it takes a little time to get yourself set and figure out who's making decisions and who's doing what. I have confidence that it'll get better going forward. But those are my complaints.
All right. We've got some positives. We got some complaints. We're going to take a break, and then we've got more questions. Back soon.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show, where David Goss has been continuing to talk about Yaya Toure in the break and his enthusiasm for it. Do you now have Yaya Cam up, Goss? Is that what you're paying attention to while we record?
Yeah, Paramount Plus has its own pop-out that you're able to do. Is that not exciting for you guys? It's like exciting. Yaya Toure is an exciting name.
What excites you about him being an assistant coach? The prospect of him getting a bigger gig? The prospect of him eating birthday cake on the sidelines?
Nothing.
What is it
for just,
you?
It just makes the Saudi Arabia game more watchable. You know?
Okay. Anything it takes, Goss. Yeah. I appreciate that. I appreciate, again, your steadfast attention to detail as we record this episode.
I'm locked in, guys.
Question. I'm locked in. Another question comes from Discord Stu. Disco Stu doesn't advertise. What are your thoughts on Pedro de la Vega to Seattle? Joe, a quick sort of primer for people who are not Seattle fans or have forgotten. How does Brian Schmetzer want to play in terms of formation and approach before we get into how Pedro de la Vega will fit in Seattle?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Taylor, and I think it will help set the foundation. Brian Schmetzer, for the most part, likes to let his talent do the work. Now, that's not to say that he just sits around on his hands all day and kind of twiddles his thumbs and lets everybody. I don't know how you twiddle your thumbs and sit on your hands at the same time, by the way. It's difficult. Brian Schmetzer is a talented guy. Like, he's doing stuff. He's providing structures for Seattle to go out there and execute out of. But it's not hard and fast commitment to one particular way of playing in the way that the Red Bulls tend to play, or in the way that the Columbus Crew under Wilfred Nancy tend to play. Defensively, for the Sounders, they usually play out of a 4-4-2. They press some, they'll be willing to sit deeper and play against the ball at other moments. They tend to be pretty man-oriented at times through the middle. Like, they will get in your grill defensively, but they're not an all-out pressing team. They're not going to be in the top of that metric every year. And then with the ball, again, it's a lot of player-driven stuff. They're not super detailed or intricate with their build-up patterns. Oftentimes, they'll shift from that back four to a back three, with Nuhu becoming the left-sided center back in the back three, which pushes Alex Roldan high and wide on the right side. And so the structure you end up playing out of in possession is a back three. The left winger then is holding width high and wide on the left side, while Alex Roldan, holds width high and wide on the right side. Usually there's a double pivot in midfield, and then the attackers are sort of a little freer in that front line. So it's roughly a 3-4-3. At times, Nuhu doesn't stay back quite that deep, and it just ends up looking like a 4-2-3-1. But generally speaking, when we think about De La Vega, I think a lot of folks, myself included, imagine him hugging the sideline wide on that left side and being the width provider in a way that Leo Chu was sort of, he was tasked with doing that last year, but didn't do it especially well outside of Taylor, maybe the one Seattle game that you watched in person, where I think the Sounders cook Sporting Kansas City in Kansas City. So I think that's the vision for De La Vega.
But Jordan Morris was overrated and not likely to score.
You win some, you lose some, Taylor. You really do. Yeah, you didn't have to say that, but it was big of you for bringing it back up yet again on this show. But that's the tactical foundation. It's a lot of player-driven stuff. They like the ball. They're not married to it. They like to press. They're not married to that either. Players have some flexibility, but there are also these structures, usually a three back with a one winger wide and one fullback high and wide that they play out of with the ball.
And in terms of chance creation, do you expect if he's on the left, Pedro de la Vega, is he crossing? Is he cutting inside and taking shots? Because I do think that factors into how he's being utilized, specifically which foot he prefers to use.
Yeah, he's super right-footed. Like, maybe not Carlos Vela left-footed, but De La Vega is super, super one-foot dominant. He does not like to use his left foot whatsoever. He'll take pains to avoid using that left foot. So I'll just go through the rest of my scouting report, and then I want to hear Goss's take. Great right foot, excellent on the dribble, like really, really good 1v1. Very vertical. Like, this guy loves, I don't know if it's usually the NFL, right, where you hear scouting terms like north-south versus east-west, or maybe that's in the NBA. Somebody who really likes to close ground vertically rather than horizontally. Like, De La Vega is a vertical north-south kind of player, and he works hard defensively. Like, you toss all those things into a blender, and there's a player there that Brian Schmetzer very much likes to have at his disposal. Some things I don't like, and reasons why I'm not sure this is a slam dunk signing, even though Diego Valeri very much thinks it is. He's again, super one-footed, as I mentioned. He doesn't really create chances. Like, De La Vega, 22 years old, coming in as a DP, he doesn't have a track record of going out and creating danger in the final third. Yeah, he can eliminate guys on the dribble. He can progress the ball. He's technically skilled, but he's not decisive or incisive in the final third. He was in the 36th percentile in non-penalty expected goals plus expected assisted goals among wingers and attacking midfielders in Argentina's top flight last year. And that's where he's coming from. He was with Lanús in Argentina. Seattle paid several million dollars to acquire his services. He's just not all the way there in the final third just yet. Now, the other thing I don't love, or you could spin this as a positive, depending on if you're a Seattle fan or a Portland fan, he's only played 3,200 minutes in his career so far. He's 22 years old. Usually by that point in time, if you're a high-level soccer player, you have played significantly more than 3,200 professional minutes. De La Vega had, I believe, a knee injury. He's had certainly a lower body injury before that's kept him out for some time. And again, when he's been on the field, he just hasn't been super goal dangerous. So the bet that Seattle are making is that they can turn him into a really high-level winger in their structure, with their talent development, like with the players around him. And I think that's a pretty good bet to make, but it is still a bet. Like, this is not, in my view at least, a slam dunk signing that makes them better overnight. I think it will make them better. I think it could make them a lot better by the time the playoffs come around, but it wouldn't surprise me, Goss, if this is a move that takes a little time to come together on the field.
I agree with you. The holes in his game, I think, from at least the outside, as we're waiting for him to play, feel fairly obvious. And then I think some of the moments of conversation now of, like, he's an upgrade on Leo Chu, but you've also not lost Nico Lodero, but Lodero wasn't starting, of like, oh, as the overall piece, how does the Sounders get better? It seems clear he's going to be better than Leo Chu, who maybe shouldn't have even been a starter, but he's going to add an element that didn't exist. And I think the thing that, when you look at the Sounders over the last year and a half, basically from the CCL win on, there was this plodding movement in that final third. They have ball progressors from the middle third, and they have tempo setters. They have Rusnak, they have João Paulo, who is elite at what he does from a deeper position, and they're going to play some rotation of Atencio and other guys, I think, in central midfield, who have shown they can be really good. So that's where I think it's okay that you lose Lodero and you don't replace him like for like, because you do have strength centrally. And you've got a guy, and Joe talked about how Alex Roldan steps into the game, who is a chance creator as a passer and a ball mover from that right back position when he comes inside. So the Sounders as a unique team have some of what you'd expect from a quote-unquote number 10 from other positions. It should allow De La Vega to do what he does best, which is take guys on 1v1, which is something that just hasn't existed in this team. And so every time you got into situations where teams were sitting deeper, or in a game that was even and open, you now have someone who can create something out of nothing, who can create something that doesn't require a massive numbers advantage. So maybe you don't have to push Nuhu high as often, or you don't have to push Alex Roldan high as often. So maybe you can be a little bit safer at times defensively. And I think you take some of the pressure off Christian Roldan, off Rusnak, and off Jordan Morris. And the hope then is they can all play a little bit freer like they were in the CCL run, when it felt like all of them fit perfectly into their roles. And as Lodero sort of decreased in what he was capable of, and the losses at times of Rui Diaz, and then the lack of production from Leo Chu, it felt like a lot of them were pressing and not pressing in a team move. Like, they were trying to strain to play at a higher level and do things that they're not fully comfortable with. So that's the hope with this acquisition, is like, you've added this element to the team of 1v1 ability to break down defenders without having to have five players in the area moving the ball perfectly that didn't exist, and chances start to come a little bit quicker. And I'd throw in, I think it's football, by the way. I think you're a north-south runner as a running back. That's where they use the term. That's what Jordan Morris is. He stretches the field. Very often there's no one with him. And I think that will be interesting to see when the Sounders are against the ball. How high is De La Vega? How often is he the second option? Do they start playing that initial long ball over that left channel so that as Jordan Morris goes to pick it up, he's either got an underlap or someone to connect with? Or is it the opposite, which is he starts getting played down the right channel so that De La Vega can be a finisher coming across the box, which we've seen Jordan Morris be good at when him and Roldan have linked up in a few moments like that. So there's that other element, which is I think he fits in with what Jordan Morris does best and can be a huge weapon for the Seattle Sounders, especially on the road.
Yeah, there are real reasons to like this signing. There's a lot of reasons to back the Sounders in particular as an organization to develop existing professionals, right? Like, we have real evidence of them being a great spot for players to blossom into top five, top 10 players of their position in Major League Soccer. You can look at both Roldan brothers. You can look at Jordan Morris. You can look at even some of the younger guys. You look at an Atencio or a Vargas. Like, those are useful to very, very good MLS players. So in general, I back the Sounders to be a good spot to develop De La Vega. I just think it's clear that De La Vega still needs to develop. He is not the finished product yet. He hasn't played enough soccer for anybody to really have a complete grasp on his game and what he can bring to an MLS team that is trying to compete for trophies. Two final thoughts for me on this whole move. Seattle, I think, are very clearly, as things stand right now, the best team in the Western Conference. LAFC have the power to wrestle that slot away from them. As their offseason goes on, they just dropped a video with three new hats coming out of some sort of like Night at the Museum-esque crate that they have somewhere underneath their stadium. So there are moves coming for LAFC, and I think they still have the one player that the Sounders don't. Like, they still have Dennis Bouanga, and the Sounders don't have an elite MLS player, a top five MLS player. LAFC do, and that gives LAFC the potential edge anytime they meet. But the Sounders, on quality right now, in depth, are clearly the best team in the West. And the last thing, even though I'm a bit skeptical about certain parts of this move, I think it's another example of Major League Soccer teams having to be a bit skeptical, right? If you're a team in MLS, you don't have the luxury of going out and waiting for Pedro De La Vega to score 12 goals and put together 8 assists in an age 21 season, because when you do that, he's going to La Liga. And if you do that at age 19, you're going to Manchester City, right? So again, I think there are reasons to poke some holes in this move, but if you're an MLS team, you have to go out and make speculative moves, because if you don't, like, you're just straight up not going to have, most of the time, good players in Major League Soccer. So there's even more risk with some of these deals in Major League Soccer than there are, you know, maybe at the higher levels of the game over in Europe.
I think those are two very strong points at the end there, Joe. All the points were good. But those two especially, because I sat down and watched a good amount of Pedro De La Vega in his time with Lanús, and I had those concerns. He seems pretty scrappy, pretty raw, exciting, but a lot of loose control, a lot of heavy touches, a few dribbles out of bounds, a few dribbles straight into a defender. He will also, I was surprised to see, occasionally move central and try to play back to goal and hold up play, but more often than not draw fouls because he's littler and tends to get shoved over there. But it did feel like he was a player who was just sort of trying stuff, trying to turn and take people on, ready to go forward at a moment's notice, but didn't seem to have that end product. And so I think the point stands. Seattle can develop players. That works to his advantage. And then also Seattle can't really wait until he rounds his game out a bit and adds those goals and that next level ability, because then he is probably playing in Spain or Italy or elsewhere. So I have some trepidation about it as well. I think I'm less positive than I was when the move was first announced, but that's because I've watched actual footage of him instead of basing it off of FIFA career mode, as I've talked about previously. Any other thoughts on Pedro De La Vega, or shall we move to our next question?
I would just say what we're describing as that player, I don't think there's a better situation than the Sounders, which is like they have strengths at all other 10 starting spots and the game is not on your shoulders. So as a young player who your best skill set is taking guys on, but when you lose it, sorry, and I'm not going to be effective all the time, that's the best spot you could come into, because that's kind of all they're asking you for until you get your feet set and until you get more comfortable, which I think when we look at like some of the other players, like an Alan Velasco at time, Martin Ojeda, players like that have struggled, the team's kind of been on their shoulders from day one or very early on. That won't be the case with this team.
All right, let's keep it moving then. Let's go to the next question from Sing.Electric. When the Apple TV deal was announced, one of the positives people talked about was the league's ability to now develop non-match programming. The Drive to Survive docuseries has been announced. But if you could greenlight one program that currently isn't on MLS Season Pass, what could it be? Guys, I did not check Season Pass listings, the most recent ones, but I really think we could use some sort of dedicated coverage on Lionel Messi and what he's up to. I don't know if that exists or has been done yet, but it feels like a no-brainer.
It's actually Lionel, as we've discussed earlier.
I think about it as Antoine Randall L.
Like, you need a little bit of a pause between Lion and L.
How do you know that gap?
I'm not sure how that's in my subconscious somewhere, but it absolutely is, and I've been waiting to drop it since Goss said it earlier.
Wow. Joe, since that was such a wonderful reference, why don't you start us off with your answer to this question?
All right, my top answer is, I want a transfer window special. I want, like, a weekly transfer show. Specifically, I want it with Tom breaking news, breaking down the news, giving some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that he's doing on his YouTube channel right now, which is good. Listeners, go check that out. Just look up Tom Bogert on YouTube. He did not pay me to say this, but Tom, it is good. And I want someone else on there, or maybe a few other folks, like going up to some sort of a tactics board and breaking some stuff down, like doing the conversation we just had about De La Vega. You know, if we're talking about MLS pokes, like, have Tom and Doyle go out there and, like, play some 2v2 for a while. Like, it just feels so obvious to me that that would be a really engaging piece of content. I don't know if the audience is there, but among people that are interested in that sort of thing, it feels like this would be a kind of a no-brainer, getting to have that balance of Tom breaking stuff down, like explaining the behind-the-scenes machinations of it all, and then somebody like on the board kind of going through, or on the maybe on the film room, right? Just like going through the signing and the mechanics and actually, are they a good player? Are they not? And how are they going to fit with this new team?
And I think it's important to note, you're talking specifically about Tom and Doyle and not giving David Goss any opportunity, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I wouldn't want Goss to have any chances to continue to further his career in any way.
Me and Jeff Lowry have our own show going, so we're good. I don't need that.
That's one of the ones that's on my list. It just feels like it would be such good content, especially as MLS is getting to be a bigger player in the transfer space. Like, go in and break the incoming moves down. Go, you know, if Thiago Amada goes to Fiorentina, like, go break that down. Talk about why it's a big deal and maybe how he'll fit and what it means for MLS. We get some of that in bits and pieces, but having a dedicated spot in the transfer windows in the summer, in the winter, that feels like it would be really, really good content.
I like that one, Joe. For me, there's a risk that this exists because, to be honest, when you go to MLS Season Pass, there are so many things on there that it's difficult to know all of the things that exist, but I would love, and I don't think we would ever get, but a warts and all look at like three players moving from MLS to Europe and what that transition is like, and then three players coming into Major League Soccer who have no existing experience, and sort of contrasting the situations and the scenarios they find themselves in. And that could feature artificial turf and commercial airline travel and having to deal with the ins and outs of an MLS season and Leagues Cup being thrown in. But I think it would also be interesting to see players moving from MLS and kind of comparing the facilities, comparing the experience, comparing the atmosphere. And I don't know if MLS would love that, because I think sometimes it probably wouldn't be the best look. But I also think seeing the warts is what is also makes it more interesting and creates a little bit of drama that I think would pull in some people. So that's one for me I think could be kind of cool. I look forward to that never, ever being greenlit by Major League Soccer. Goss, give us a program that would be greenlit with you in charge.
I don't know if any of that's the case, but I've always dreamed of an MLS like College Game Day. Mm-hmm. I still think, and we're going to get it on our next question, but I still think the number one selling point of Major League Soccer is the supporters and the atmospheres. And it just seems like a no-brainer to me of like, maybe it's the day before the weekend of games. So maybe it's like Friday night, a weekend preview at the supporters bar in each market, or, you know, out at a tailgate in the morning, and then you have the games all coming up later in that day. It just, I know that sometimes that puts a strain on supporters and can be a little bit annoying, but at the same time, you can do things to make it feel like a reward and make it feel positive, as it should. And I just think it would be really fun. Obviously, we've been really fortunate. I know you guys have done a bunch of live stuff as well. And like, you know, extra time, we did a couple live shows and meets with fans, and like, it's awesome. It's always better to have a screaming crowd behind something than not have a screaming crowd. And when you watch College Game Day and all these things, it's all about like celebrating the fan culture. And I think MLS fan culture is better than college basketball and college football. And so I think it would just be a really cool thing to be able to do. And it seems pretty well set up.
I like that one. I like that a lot. Would you have hot takes? Would you have people screaming at the crowd when they say the home team is going to lose?
Yeah, like, you gotta put a hat on every time.
There we go. Okay.
Or have a live animal come out or something like that upon your predictions.
I'm very into that. Let's make that happen. I like live animals on the preview show. What could possibly go wrong? I look forward to Andrew Wiebe fleeing a live broadcast. That should be good. We've got two more questions to this episode. We will answer them when we come back. Back soon. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Welcome back. Gentlemen, final segment, home stretch, two questions remaining. Goss alluded to it previously, so Goss, I'm coming to you first. Nice. Rat called AJ, which is maybe AJ Soprano. What are the top five MLS game day atmospheres? Goss, how say you? I think you're the one who's been to the most games, I'm going to guess, of the three of us. So I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
I think I'm going to end up on more than five, so I'm just going to start naming things, and they're not in an order, but they're all like a unique experience. I'm going to go Cincinnati.
Did I ask you for best cop-out answer? I wasn't sure if that was what was asked. But sure, go ahead.
I would like to send a formal invite for both of you to suck it. And you're so, but that'll be in your email.
Thank you.
Cincinnati, Atlanta. I'm going to go with Seattle and Portland. So that's four. And then I will say LAFC. So those would be my five.
All right.
I ended on five. I did it.
What makes Cincy top of that list?
I've actually never been to a Cincinnati game.
Interesting.
So that was a bold move. Cincinnati and St. Louis and Vancouver, the three I've never been to. But it looks amazing. I think for me, it was kind of like, okay, big stadiums, small stadiums, in cities, sort of not. That's kind of a lot of what drives my experience at MLS stadiums is like, what's the experience of like getting there and walking up and being around people? And like, is it a huge parking lot with great tailgates? Is it a bar area where it's in the city and people are all sort of milling about all day? They're all different. And it sounds like Cincinnati has a lot of those elements of like being accessible, being right there, new building. And I've never turned on a Cincinnati game on TV that wasn't an incredible crowd. And that's through the years when they were horrendous. So it feels like you're kind of always guaranteed a really good experience. So plus now they've been good. So it's fun to watch. And I think they've handled all the really big games really well. Like all of the Open Cups, Leagues Cup, playoff games have felt like a big deal at that stadium and felt like a place that you want to be. Atlanta's always been that way.
Can I jump in on Cincinnati, if you don't mind? Sorry. But since I slammed them earlier, I feel like I should come back and say nice things. I have not been to an FC Cincinnati game. I have been to that stadium for a USA-Mexico game where it was very loud and a very good atmosphere, though it was both cold and raining. That did not dampen the vibes at all. The pregame was spectacular. I also love like an industrial city. I'm a big fan of that. I would say put Cincinnati on that list. And I love an industrial city with a stadium in the downtown or a couple stadiums downtown. And they had that as well. So I agree with you guys. I think the Cincinnati experience is pretty solid. That stadium is awesome. The same probably goes for Atlanta. That stadium is pretty magnificent when it's packed and hosting playoff games for sure.
Thanks for the follow-up, Taylor. Thanks for being on my side. I didn't, because when we're talking to Cincinnati fans, I really wanted to be associated to you.
Mm-hmm.
In this moment, I wanted us to be tied together.
It's usually Columbus who get mad at me for shots at Columbus. So I figured,
which is also a great atmosphere,
love,
by mm-hmm. the way. But I think it's going to take a couple more years for them to like rebuild things. Atlanta, if you've never been, go. I know it feels like a cliche, and you're like, ah, oh, blah, blah. It is awesome. It's unique. It's different. The Pacific Northwest as well. And then LAFC, it just, when the 3252 jumps and you're in the building, it's like nothing else. So as much as other teams have like built up great things and you could argue better things, I think for me, still that experience, and you saw, you know, to open MLS Cup, like it felt like you were in Argentina with the way the supporter section reacted. I know they got in trouble for it and all those other things. That's not really my problem, so I don't care. It's still special. It's still unique, but I got to get in a car. I got to drive. I got to be in LA. Like, there's a lot of negatives that come with that one as well. So it's not going to be top of the list.
All right. Joe, for you, I don't know how many of these stadiums you've been to, these teams you've seen in person, but I'm guessing you've got a list for us.
I do. I have a top three that I feel good about. Mm-hmm. And I know I made fun of Goss, but I don't have a top five because I just haven't been to enough games. Portland are top of my list because of some of the external factors that Goss mentioned, the location of the stadium. Providence Park is just awesome. Like, it is such a cool venue in Major League Soccer. And that is maybe where I would have the first college game day that we're now adopting for MLS season pass. Portland's top on my list. Seattle's number two. Also a fantastic environment. So loud, Taylor. I still remember being there for 2019 MLS Cup. And like, the press box was shaking. And this is an NFL press box, right? So like, there are tons and tons of seats, and it's like got a Starbucks inside. And like, we're 40,000 stories high, and we can still feel the whole thing shaking. Atlanta, never been to, number three on my list. Great attendance, great atmosphere by all accounts. They're absolutely in that top three. And then I've got for my blob, Cincinnati, Columbus, LAFC, Austin, and St. Louis. I've been to two of those, Columbus and LAFC, both very, very good. I'd probably give a slight edge to LA on that front. Never been to Cincinnati, looks awesome. Never been to Austin, looks awesome. Never been to St. Louis, also looks awesome on TV. There are other ones that belong in this discussion, but I feel like those are sort of maybe in the second tier after Portland, Seattle, Atlanta. But if someone would like to sponsor me to go to every stadium in MLS so I could have a real answer, AJ, if you want to make this happen, I would be happy to follow up with you and even like do a sort of whatever you want. I'll make it happen on the content side of things. And maybe we can go and tour the U.S.
And it was the most expensive question AJ had ever asked.
I think we've landed on Joe's Apple TV show. It's Joe going to every stadium and then compiling a list and then getting yelled at for it and getting laminated across the board.
I like
Sounds
it.
Sounds good to me.
At the end, I just have to sit down with Anthony Precourt and explain why Austin aren't in the top spot. I think that's a good punishment for all the fun that I would have along the way.
Austin definitely in the convo. Toronto definitely in the convo for people who are like looking for trips that they want to do to go to games. Those are two really high ones on the list. SKC as well. Those would be the other ones. I guess St. Louis in there, but I've never been.
As I already mentioned previously, my only Sporting Kansas City game was not a great game for the home crowd. So I do think that factors into it. I feel like I've got a lot of the ones that would maybe be closer to the bottom of y'all's list as games that I have been to, stadiums that I have been to.
I thought the ones you were going to pick.
Yeah,
like, that feels like a weird flex.
Going against the grain, Taylor. I like it.
I've been to games in Atlanta and Seattle and Orlando. Haven't been to Portland or Austin. Those do seem pretty amazing. Portland would make my list, even though I've never been there, because of the fan engagement that we've seen, the Iron Front, the fan protests, the front office protests. It does feel like there's so much engagement and so much commitment to that team from the supporters that they would make it onto the list. But yeah, Sporting KC was a rough one. DC United, Red Bulls, Philly, Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte had a good atmosphere, but that was also their opener.
Have you not been to a Philly playoff game?
No, I have not.
Oh, Philly playoff games are legit.
Okay.
It's a vibe.
It's just the Chester aspect.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not going to fight to put them top five, but like, if you're ever around Philly for a game where they're sold out, which is now fairly often, like, the stadium bumps and it's cool. And they sing Robin sometimes at the end of the game, which is sick.
I'll take that. And then, yeah, Red Bull Arena. If you've ever wanted to walk past industrial construction sites with chain link fencing around them and then get to the stadium, that's a great way to do it. So though I do love an industrial city, I did not love walking to Red Bull Arena and the trip that required. So yeah, Atlanta, Seattle, Portland, Austin. I had Orlando in there. I liked Orlando mostly because it's the outdoor press box a lot of the time, so you get to experience the game a little bit more. Although I'm going to guess July and August in Orlando, that's less of a fun proposition. But I did enjoy those, and I did enjoy that question. Final question. It's one we referenced earlier from John26 in the Discord. How big of an impact do you think Emil Forsberg will have on the New York Red Bulls this season? He's already scored a goal from his own half in a preseason friendly. So, Joe, I don't think there's any bigger impact he can have over the course of the season than that one individual moment.
It's an unbelievable goal. It's an unbelievable goal. The only thing that maybe stands out to me more is just like how little everyone on the field seems to care about it happening. Yeah. He's like a good 12 yards inside his own half. It's from crazy far out.
You know, and he like, had already tried it like six times.
Maybe that's what it was. And I was like, Emil, stop. Dude. Quit it, man. Just play soccer. I don't know what it was, but no one on the field seemed to care. I thought it was a great goal and I loved it. And I will be watching it again later today because I've already spent several minutes watching it this morning. He's going to make the Red Bulls attack noticeably better. Like, the Red Bulls have had a giant crater in their squad where the number 10 is supposed to be for 2 years now. Luquinhas, who was signed as the DP ahead of the 2022 season, one of my least favorite MLS players ever. If we're still doing that, put together an MLS lineup that the other people hate. Gosh, there's another player for you.
Like, on the list of Luquinhas, Gonzalo Verón, and Kaku, would you just have all three of them on your team?
No, I mean, Kaku, yeah, he kicked a ball into somebody in the stands. Don't do that. On the field, he was actually like good. He was a respectable number 10 in Major League Soccer.
Until he was like, hey, I'm just not going to come back.
Well, yeah, you know, there's that.
I play for another team now, whether you sell me or not, so you should probably sell me.
It would have been better for the Red Bulls if Luquinhas did not come back for the 2023 season. He was a net negative for them last year. He's back in Brazil now. Better for him, better for the Red Bulls, better for everybody. So Emil Forsberg is such an obvious upgrade on Luquinhas. He's not going to be a Reynoso who's back in Minnesota. Everybody's happy about that. Actually, might be in Arizona right now. I'm not sure because I think they got preseason out here. Carles Gil, Lucho Acosta, Thiago Almada. Forsberg's not going to be that kind of player. He's not going to have that kind of impact because he's not a through ball threading number 10. And he's just straight up not as good at creating chances as those players. He is a more well-rounded kind of floating attacker who can play a little wider at times. He can take on players 1v1. He's just not going to thread balls in behind the back line like those players, but he has quality in possession. He's willing to work defensively. He should help smooth things out in whatever shape Sandro Schwartz is trying to use this year for the Red Bulls. I am setting the over-under for you two, now that I've gone through sort of my reasoning. I want to plant my flag in the ground here. I'm setting the over-under for goal contributions for Emil Forsberg at 16.5 for this year. So goals and assists combined, 16.5. I will be taking the over. I have down on my list 8 goals, 10 assists. And I'm not talking about the MLS assist ones. Great podcast, terrible statistic. Like, I'm talking actual primary assists.
I feel the other way around, actually.
Fair enough. Taylor, what say you? 8 goals, 10 assists. I set the line at 16.5. Which way are you going?
I think it's a really good signing, and I think he's a really good player. I have liked him for quite some time. So I will take the over, though I don't know a ton about how New York will actually attack and play and score goals. But I think if you're asking me if I think he'll be good, I think he'll be good. So I'll take the over.
Goss?
First of all, whenever I do this, I like to say credit, good line.
Thank you.
I think you hit it, but I will go over, so maybe
nice.
You didn't. Because all of us did.
Hold on, stop. If I'd done 17.5, because I picked 18 combined. Like, that's where I think. So 17.5, I would still go over. Would you still be over at 17?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, all right. So yeah, it wasn't a good line. It was a line with room for
improvement. No, it felt good. It made you think, and I think it puts it in a good spot of like 8-8 would be a good first season.
Sure.
But the expectations are a little bit higher. I would point out specifically when we're talking about like counting stats, I think he's going to take every set piece. I think this is a team that's going to be dangerous on set pieces with the center back options they have, as well as potentially the center forwards. We'll see what it looks like this year. So I think that's a huge threat that he'll be a part of. And in the signing overall, it's just like you look over the last 10 years, as whatever debate you have about whether the Red Bull system wins in the playoffs and wins MLS Cups, it's a team that has won in the regular season when they've spent any amount of money. And Emil Forsberg is spending money on a player at a higher level than what they've done probably since Thierry Henry, maybe you could say since Sasha Kljestan. So it feels pretty straightforward of just like they're better than they were last year today because he's on the team and because he's played in the system. He should fit in quicker than a normal acquisition for the Red Bulls takes, and they are always a playoff team anyway, so the step should be pretty strong. They should contend for a top 4 spot in the Eastern Conference. I don't think they're MLS Cup favorites. I don't know that we'll really feel like they're contenders with the way the group's set up right now. But I think they're definitely better than they've been, and I think he'll be a positive.
Joe, I want to go back to something you said at the beginning of the show when talking about this move. I don't want to misquote you, but it was basically the idea that this could be representative of more movement from Europe to the MLS Red Bull team. Is that based on just like an opinion? Is that based on something you've read, or is it based on wishful thinking?
Something I've read that I wrote myself.
There we go.
That counts. Name a meaningful move from RB Salzburg or RB Leipzig to the New York Red Bulls. I'll cut through because we're getting to the end of the show. You cannot. Like that, it hasn't happened. There have not been key players.
There's one.
For the Red Bulls. Go ahead.
Carlos Coronel.
Okay. All right. Maybe key wasn't.
It
the
was
right
a
term.
Fake one, but it is one.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. There have been very
by
few.
A half second. I had that one coming in right after Goss. I was there.
Takayoka.
Wow. Anytime a goalkeeper comes up on this show, David loves to bring up Takayoka for Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor's favorite player.
The greatest goalkeeper of all time.
Everybody knows that. Like there have been so few meaningful interactions, both directions, but especially moves from Salzburg and Leipzig to the New York Red Bulls. This is not a repeatable kind of thing, at least not year over year over year. It's not like there's going to be a Forsberg coming from Leipzig or Salzburg every season because they don't have a ton of those players. Like he was still getting meaningful Champions League. There you go. Like there's not going to be a ton of these coming down the pipeline. But this is a sign that Red Bull Global remembers that the New York Red Bulls exist. Like I think I said something about that earlier. There have just been almost no interactions across these branches in some way that involves RBNY. So, like, I like the idea of there being something going on here. And maybe this means that there'll be more things that happen down the road.
Okay. I would be excited for that. That connection would make sense because they are connected, lest we forget.
And the last piece of the hope would be that you have characters in Schneider and Sandro Schwartz that are viewed at a high level in Germany or Austria, wherever things are based out of, and have connections there to influence going in the direction of New York in a way that hasn't really existed. I think Jesse Marsh obviously was highly thought of, but I think like Jesse Marsh and Gerhard Struber were trying to get in to Red Bull Global at the European level, where it feels like Schneider is being brought here to help prop things up here for the European side. And so I think part of that connection and relationship that Joe talks about has been the power dynamic of like it always being in one direction. Because there has been moves. They've all been the other way. They've been Tyler Adams. They've been Caden Clark. They've been guys like that. And it's not ever really been helpful. And I think that change has hopefully changed a little bit with the characters that have been put in. The other piece would be, I think there's a little bit of an acknowledgement of like, oh, we can't just play 21-year-olds and then have them get better. They need some support. So that's where you see an Emil Forsberg. And I think the hope would be if you're a Red Bull fan, is like, that's an acknowledgement now going forward of like, at some point there needs to be a steady hand inside the team to help the young players get better and find their feet and establish themselves. And hopefully that's a trend that continues after Forsberg.
All right, there we are. Well, gentlemen, thank you both for answering those many questions. There weren't that many, but we did a good job of answering them all the same. Joe Lowry, thank you for your answers. They were all quite good, and Jeff's were even pretty good, too.
Yeah, Joe and Jeff both say thank you, Taylor. This was fun.
I'm glad. And David Goss, you were fine.
I'd like to report Yaya Toure still no goals, no assists as assistant coach of Saudi Arabia in this game.
What's the score?
0-0.
So Jurgen Klinsmann still has a job?
Yeah, he's
all right.
Crushing it.
Let's flip them. Let's flip them at halftime. Jurgen Klinsmann becomes Saudi Arabia assistant. Yaya Toure coaches South Korea for the second half. And if
South Korea
change,
wins 5-0.
Oh, of course. Of course. Birthday cake for all. Listeners, thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you again very soon.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.